Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Psycho Vertical Podcast. It's me, Andy Kirkpatrick, back again. Today I am in Brecon, in the Brecon Beacons, and I'm in a hotel. And I was in the theatre last night. I'm still on tour, so I was in a theatre in Brecon, Theatre Brecon, I think it's called. And it was kind of a little bit weird, because in Wales they've got like social distancing, so in the theatre you have to have a big. You have to have big gaps between everybody. So you'd have like two people and there'd be four empty seats, then two people and four empty seats. And it basically, I think I had like two, I kind of sold out. So when I arrived at the venue, they said, "Oh, you've sold out." I was like, "Oh, that's good, because it's like 400 seats." They said, "Oh, no, we could only sell like half the seats. So you've got like 200 people." So yeah, it just creates like a strange atmosphere. You kind of go out there and it's just, it's just big, I don't know, it's like just a bit strange. I think when people sit together, it creates some kind of, you become a group. You're not an individual, you're just a group. So often, you know, when you say something funny or something, it creates like a vibe, I guess, not something like a hippie. Kind of goes through everybody at the same time, but when people are all separated out, it's sort of different. You know, you get this thing. It's why when you go to church, when people go to church, they'd all sit together in pews. They'd all kind of squash together because it creates like some sort of vibration between everybody. So you know, people would laugh even if it wasn't that funny because other people were laughing. Sorry, I'm tired. So that was kind of weird, and it was a little bit like when I was up in Inverness, it wasn't too bad because people sat together, but then everyone had to wear a mask, so it's like being in bloody Saudi Arabia or somewhere. How is the tour going? It's going okay. It's going as best as could be. I had a few emails from people saying how I sound like I'm a little bit too sensitive about criticism and things, I took that quite personally, that kind of criticism about my lack of, you know, anyway, so my thin skin. Is that awful though? If you're sensitive and people say you've got thin skin, it's the worst thing you can say. Anyway, but I tend to view it more like if you're a chef and everyone's saying your food was shit, you know, like that's probably something worth listening to. If you're a chef and everyone's like, I keep having diarrhea every time I come to your restaurant, that's probably something worth listening to. But if you're making like Indian food and people are saying your food's a bit too spicy, like that's different. So I think you have to kind of separate out the criticism, or you know, some of it's constructive, some of it's not constructive, into those things, you know, basically, you just can't, if you want to do something good, you can't do something that everyone thinks is okay. You know, if you want people to think, if you want some people to think it's great, you will then have people, some people thinking it's shit. So that's the way you, that's the way it goes. You just have to have enough people who think it's not shit. Which in, when it comes to slideshows, you know, outdoor climbing, outdoor shows, like the standard's so low anyway that you know, like it's quite hard to be really shit. You'd have to really, you'd have to go out your way to make it that shit that people were like, oh, that was really shit. Like I've seen like a lot of slideshows. There's only a few I can ever think of which were like really, really shit. Like when someone was literally just like reading the, you know, reading the words off a slide or something. And God, you'll be yawning as well now. Listen to this. What was I saying? So really, it's kind of important to listen to what people are saying, but then ultimately have some sort of judgment. So I did a talk in Reged, which is at Cumbria, last week, and although the sound was really bad, like, as soon as I turned up and I was like, plugged the thing in, I was like, oh God, this sounds terrible. And the guy was like, is that all right? I'm like, no, not really. And people always blame you, like if you have a bad sound, they think it's your fault, like you're the guy who, like, you know, plumbed in all the bloody speakers and all the wires. I was like, oh no, that doesn't sound very good. And it was like a bit of a nightmare. And anyway, it was like an IMAX screen, so you're just blowing up this image which looks okay on a projector when it's projected, but the IMAX screen's so massive, it just looked a bit shit. And it was just like so huge, and like if you were sitting in the audience, you couldn't see, it was just like you're just looking at a big pixel or something in front of your face. So it was like so massive, so it wasn't ideal. But anyway, the venue had sold out. It feels like quite a big space, but it was only, it's like 250 people. And the last talk I'd done was in Inverness, and that seemed to go really well. So I basically did the same thing I did in Inverness, and I was like, I tried to avoid, too many things which might like spoil the, you know, any downer stuff. And then it seemed to go all right. Anyway, so then when I came the next day, I went down to where I'm, I don't have any internet where I am, so I can't get internet on my phone. So I had to go into the town to where I'm staying to get some internet. And then I had an email. I had like a few emails saying, oh, I came to show, it was really, really good, and that kind of stuff. And then I had an email from Mike Parsons, who was the guy who set up Carrymore. So he's like in he's nearly 80 now, so he's like, you know, he's been around a long time. Anyway, he was just, this message was like, oh, came to your show last night, underwhelming, you must rethink what you're doing or something. And I was like, and to begin with, I was a little bit defensive. I was like, well, I just got 4 emails saying how good it was, like, can you give me some feedback? And then I sent it off, and then I couldn't look at his reply, because I had to go somewhere. So I was just, I don't know, it's so terrible. I just ended up like feeling so down the rest of the day. And I was just kind of like questioning the doing it, like being on stage and talking and stuff. And then I was like thinking maybe I'd said something mispolitical, or made a joke. I make a joke about vegan or vegans, as I call them, stealing that from Mark Ripperto. You know, was he upset about making fun of vegans or vegetable based diet? It's not vegetable based, it's plant based, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it could have been like so many things. I have this line about, I have some stuff about religion in there, which I think is like a redemptive narrative about religion and stuff. It's very, you know, you can see it from, you can, you know, you can either offend everybody, or it could like everyone think it was great. Depends on which way you how you look at it. So it's like my car wasn't working, so I've been having to like walk, like where I'm staying, like the arsehole of nowhere. So I had to like, it takes about an hour and a half to walk into the town over the hill. Anyway, so I was like, yeah, I was just like, I felt really down about it. I think it's probably tired as well, but I was just feeling a bit flat and like, oh God, this is it. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm just so sick of like trying to do something better than normal and then just getting like, just can't be arsed with it all. And anyways, eventually Mike got back to me and basically he had nothing to do with anything I thought it was to do with. He basically wanted it to be more technical and more focused towards hardcore climbing stuff, like what kind of laces did you have in your boots, and you know, what kind of what was the mix, the ratio of like of gases in your gas canisters and all that kind of stuff, like typical sort of climber stuff, because like climbers are such extremists. It'd be the same if I went, you know, if I was doing something about mountain biking and they're like, oh, what kind of lube are you using, you know, or whatever. So it's a very kind of human naturey thing. Well, not human nature at all, it's like climbing that's against human nature, you know, but this kind of I came to your slideshow and you didn't even mention what kind of brake cables you were using. So I guess I said that basically a long time ago I realized if I wanted to make a living, you know, doing this, I could not make a living from climbers, because A, they either don't even turn up. Like, I don't know how many proper climbers there are coming to my slideshows, but they've never been, you know, they're just not interested. They're just kind of, you know, they're not interested. They're just interested in what they do. They're not really interested in what other people do, really. Unless it's like a, you know, someone talking about, you know, a dead hanging or something. So basically, you have to make a living by talking to people who are, you know, like just general people. Like, you know, there are people who are climbers and stuff, but, you know, I don't think I've ever had any friends of mine who are like extreme mountaineers ever come to any of my slideshows for Yadel before. But you just have to get like your armchair climbers. Like, there was a lady last night who, you know, was like just like an older lady who was she was probably into drinking tea and eating cakes, but you know, she's like, oh, okay, I really enjoyed it and blah blah blah. And you know, so some people they just take a punt on it. They just see, oh, this guy's talking. He's talking about his adventures, and you know, it sounds supposed to be funny and stuff. And so yeah, you're just doing that kind of stuff. It's a bit like, do you know what I've realized actually? I don't actually like hardcore history. Have you ever listened to hardcore history? Like, people were always telling me like, oh, you need to listen to hardcore history. But it's just a bit shit. I just decided it's a bit shit. It's just a bit like, just rambles on. It doesn't really have any. It just rambles on. I'm like, oh, fucking get to the point. You know, anyway, you know, there could be. I think I'm listening to one of his podcasts and it's about 6 hours long. It could be like 30 minutes long and it could just be. It'd be better, I think. So, I don't know what my point is there. I guess like the scope of what I'm talking about. I could probably make like an hour long slideshow. You could probably chop it up into about 10 or more slideshows that are just about that one thing, like going to climb, you know, going into America or going to Kenya or whatever. But instead, it's kind of you've got like a big scope and you're trying to the whole thing about the thing is about, you know, exploring and stuff. Oh, thanks to Bear Grylls. There's some good like Bear Grylls lines in there, but like they're given with love. So if you listen to this podcast, BJ, I know you do listen sometimes. It's given with there's a lot more love towards BJ. Is it BG Bear Grylls? Grylls, yeah, BG. Not B. I used to call you BJ. It's like below job, but yeah. So there's So that's that. I've got like, I think I'm probably, this is the midpoint of it, so halfway through it. I mentioned last time about these people walking out and stuff of in Manchester. I'm now starting to suspect those people were actually, it was a plant, which was a bit bizarre, but that's the world we're living. People intentionally come with the intention of leaving and trying to create a big fuss or... So that's the world. What else is going on? God, I really, really, really noticing how I don't know if I just don't watch television, but because I've got quite a lot of downtime and staying places, watching the telly. Christ almighty, how can you stay sane watching television in the UK? Like, it's like every fucking thing is trying to modify your brain about some fuck this or that, whether it's like not eating meat or saving the planet, or it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, just fuck off. Like, you just can't be doing with it. Like, it just creates the absolute opposite effect. You just go numb to it. It's like, you know, learn helplessness. It's funny, I wrote an essay called Learned Helplessness, like a long time ago, like 2014, I think, on my blog. You'll Google it. And it's funny, it's become quite a common term, really. And probably, if you read the article, you read the thing I wrote, I was probably ahead of my time, because I was basically... people become like numb to it, really. I'm staying in a hotel last night, bit of a treat, you know. It's not a treat because it's just it's how that stay in my car. I was going to stay in an Airbnb, but it was too far to drive after my gig, because the gig didn't start till bloody 8:30 or something, which is way too late. Yeah, I was like talking to the woman this morning in the downstairs, and I was saying about how I think like Italy have now readjusted their figures for COVID, and they've basically removed like 97% of the people who they said had died of COVID. It turns out they didn't. They didn't die of COVID. They died of various other things. And I just said, like, this woman like seemed like kind of relieved that, and she was like, I don't know, it was weird, because I was like just talking about, you know, stuff like, you know, stuff to do with that, like kind of how people have become hysterical and all that kind of stuff, and she seemed like kind of relieved that someone would actually be brave enough to talk in public about shit like that. And I was just thinking, like, Christ, what the fuck's going on with people? Like, it really is crazy. There's so much kind of stuff you could talk about that's kind of interesting and also is useful to you know, keep control of your brain, you know, keep control of your mind. But you know, people are just terrified to just talk about things. Like, I was thinking, you know, because all this fucking cop shite going on in Glasgow about the environment, and like, I would say I'm interested in, you know, like, you know, reducing our impact on the planet, and, you know, consumerism and fast fashion, and, you know, increasing the, you know, making it easier for the environment to, you know, to live in some sort of equilibrium, and water and air and all that kind of stuff. The stuff that basically most people are in. But I just kind of get the impression that none of this stuff is to do with that. It's kind of going to be the opposite. Like, basically, it's just about the extraction of money from people, you know, to rich people. You know, like driving around all the. I know it's very controversial to comment about, you know, wind farms, but you know, it's the only thing you can get like a 9%, you know, return on your investment. And when people talk about, you know, solar panels on their houses, it's never fucking about my whole house is running on the solar panels. It's like, look at all this money I'm making from selling it to the grid and all that kind of shit. It's just all about, it's all about money. It's not about saving the planet. And but yeah, like a few times I've brought up, like, a few things that are stick in my mind is like traveling around. I remember going to the Flinders Range in Australia. Great place to go, and some very good rock climbing there, and staying there, I think we're like there for a month, and you go to this place where this family lived, and they had a farm there, like, and when you read the accounts of it, this was like 1870s or something, you know, they had like 10 years of drought, and they had something like 20,000 cattle die in the drought, and it just sounded like horrendous. Like basically everything died, you know, like children died. It was just like unbelievably grim. Now this is kind of before climate change, you know, this is before, you know, global warming and all that kind of stuff. So that I often thought, used to think about that. And then there's like, I remember off the coast of Hull, there used to be a town, like a medieval town. It was like, I think it was created by the Vikings, and it was bigger than Hull, so it was like quite an important town. But it was actually built onto a sandbar. So the sandbar must have been quite, you know, I guess there are areas near Hull where there were sandbars, and then they grew grasses on them, and they started putting animals on the sandbars, and the sandbars eventually, you know, the seed didn't cover them anymore, and they just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and now there's like, you know, farmland on there and houses and everything else. Anyway, but there was this Raven's Land or something it was called, and so it was quite a big settlement, and there was, you know, it was trading and everything else with the Vikings. And then one night there was a huge storm, and basically the whole thing basically kind of got washed away, and it was just abandoned. And then there was another storm. There's a really famous storm that killed about, this must have been, would this have been like the 13th, 14th century? There was a famous storm, and it killed something like 35,000 people in Europe, like a tidal surge. But again, like all this kind of shit, it just goes down the memory hole. Like everyone seems to have this idea that we've, until this century, we've lived in this world of bliss where nothing ever happened, and there was no droughts or, you know, floods or, you know, hurricanes and all this kind of stuff. So I just think, I know some people would, you know, this is like the, you know, it's the noble lie, isn't it? But I think when people just kind of cotton on that, you know, if you think like the Mer de Glace, you know, used to go all the way down to Geneva, you know, you know, it's, you know, like, I just don't think we're really engaging with reality. I think, you know, I look at the BBC, for some reason, I look at the BBC website every day, and I would say a good 50% of it is just shit, is not true, you know, like, it's not balanced, really, and the other 50% is, you know, 50% of that is not true. So, you know, it's very hard to try and retain some kind of sane perspective, you know. The world is, you know, we must have like 8 years left now till the end of the world, according to, you know, all these people. So, it's terrible to be a climate realist, but yet to be viewed as like a denier or climate skeptic or whatever. Oh, it's not. You wouldn't have used the word skeptic now, because that would be too, it's too kind to be a skeptic, you know, to be a climate denier. You know, I just think, you know, we should, you know, if we revisit this in another 10 years' time, you know, I just think the reality of power cuts and the cost of everything, and, you know, the actual, you know, there's so many things. It's just not it's just about appearances. It's not about, you know, like solid facts and reality. It's just about, you know, let's get rid of coal and all that kind of stuff. And people will say, like, why don't we listen to the experts? They're telling us to do this. And like, well, they're not experts. They're just, you know, that's kind of, they're in that business, So it's just very frustrating. I guess you don't want to get to the point where you're so old that you're like, fuck it, I don't care. You know, I'll be dead before all this like kicks off. But it's like I don't know if I've said this before, it's a bit like the COVID thing, is that people are like, oh, it was great. I've got to hang out with my kids, and I've got to, you know, learn to do fucking baking and all that kind of shit. But it's just that analogy of being on the beach and the big shipping container ship going across in the horizon, and you're like, oh, that's cool. And then like an hour later, a massive fucking wave comes on the beach and washes you all into the sea and you all drown. It's a bit like that. Like we have this like short term, we're gonna, you know, King Herod says we have to kill all the firstborn children. That sounds like a good idea. You know, that's what we're kind of like they kill all the kids. You know, it's just I had a vasectomy because of I didn't want to have any kids because of climate change. Like, you fucking idiot. In fact, thank God for that. You know, if the more people who think like that who have vasectomies, the better, really. But I do think that it's very interesting looking at Greta Thunberg, like how she's either going to be a terror, an absolute terror, as in fucking burning you at the stake kind of human being, her, and, you know, she's kind of one of these people where, you know, she could be an ally to reality, or she could be in opposition to reality. But it's the classic where people with power and influence, they exploit somebody for their own ends, but those people are of no, you know, they're not an ally to the environment, they're an ally to themselves. And this is not Greta Thunberg. Like, she is, you know, she's like, I think she's like a genuine, you know, like young person who's got like ideals and wants the world to be better, like everybody. Like, nobody wants the world to be worse. I don't think I've met anybody who does, unless they just want it to be worse for some people and better for others. But you know, but those kind of people, you can't really control them. Like, the people who I think who think they're in charge of everything, they're just incompetent and they're cowards. And they're just cack-handed, basically, and they just don't really understand what they're doing. And I think, you know, we will see, like, you know, terrorism full on, you know, IRA, you know, Al Qaeda base related, you know, like environmental terrorism, blowing things up and killing people within 10 years. But whether Greta's kind of getting it, I think. She's definitely getting it, what's really going on. So which way she goes, really, because, you know, to betray your tribe is the worst thing. Like, to be an enemy of the tribe is not so bad, but to betray your tribe, that deserves special punishment, basically. So I think the idea of being like a climate realist, of, you know, that's basically how people have been, you know, for a long time. There's a lot of really good books by people who actually do know what they're talking about. They're not just like lobbyists or idealists and things. There's some very, very interesting, you know, books about, basically, it all comes down to nuclear power. You know, that's the only way out of it, really. But like, the greatest way you could make a change to the environment of the planet, you know, is if everyone in India started burning coal rather than burning wood. You know, that would make a huge difference. But it's kind of counterintuitive. You know, the same with the meat thing. You know, like, most animals, are grazing on land that you couldn't grow crops on. Like, no one seems to pay any attention to that. And, you know, the amount of environmental destruction, you know, caused by crops, you know, again, no one really thinks about that. There's like, it's just, like all these things, it's almost like having like a MMA fight, you know, but with reality. Like, reality is always going to get you in an armbar, you know, eventually. So, you know, but I wasn't really going to talk about that. So I was going to talk about something else. So I do apologize. Anyway, if you really don't like that kind of stuff I'm just talked about, then you probably have turned off by now. And if you do, then don't like it too much, because it's good to, you know, it's good to try and, you know, make the world a better place. I was actually thinking about talking about freedom, because I've had a few interesting conversations and emails recently, because part, you know, my show is basically about Vanessa taking a sabbatical and having like 2 years off school, being a teacher, and then like traveling around. And so I have a bit in the slideshow about how financially, like, how do you do it and that kind of stuff. And I think it's like, what I think for a lot of people, you know, you have your, I know when I was working, you've got your 28 days holiday, you know, and that time is so precious, you know, especially when you're younger. As you get older, you have to like end up using your stupid holiday on like decorating the house and shit like that. So, but when, you know, when you're younger, you know, it means so much to you. Like, I don't, you ever seen that graph? You've got a graph and you've got like, on one axis, you've got age. I think on the bottom, you've got age. And then on the side, you've got like psych, how psyched you are. No, one of it's like, well, the bottom's the age. And then the one side is how motivated you are. And the other one is the capacity to do something. So when you start, you're starting at zero, and your capacity to do something begins at zero, at age zero, and it goes up like this, or like it goes diagonally across. So when you're say 80, it's maximum. You got, well, you know, it's financial capacity, it's maximum. But your psyche at year zero is basically at like 100%, you know. So when you're a child, you're just like, anything's possible, you know. As soon as you're born, like, your brain is just like, anything's possible, you're absorbing all this information, and the line is going down diagonally. So basically, at the midpoint of your life, which is usually going to be around like between, you know, 30 to 40, you have like, you know, 50% of your psyche and 50% of your possibility of doing something. You're be able to actuate, or to be able to make things happen. And so that's when a lot of people will be doing, really, you know, doing the stuff they want to do, unless they have a job. You know, like, you know, you have to try and fit that into having a job and stuff. And then the most people who are super creative, I think most of their creativity is happening in their early 20s, you know, from the age of like 16 to 25 is like a period of like when you can be very, very creative. And then as you get old, you know, you have your people retire at 65 or 85, or it is these days, and, you know, then they have all this spare time, they have all this money, they can do whatever they want, you know. But usually just buy a VW van and then just drop down dead of like a brain aneurysm. So trying to like readjust that model, you know. So I think I kind of retired when I was 30, without a pension, without any money. I just got stopped working, and then I like rebalanced my life. So I had less money, but I had more time. So, because this thing that like being poor takes up all your time, and being rich takes up everybody else's. But rich people are very time poor, and the poorest people, and you know, in Western society, you can be poor and just have as much time as you want. You know, if you're signing on, if you're unemployed or whatever, you know, you can have like a huge amount of time. Like, that's why a lot of the really good rock climbers in the 80s, they were all on the dole, because they were basically getting paid. How much I get when I was on the dole, I used to get like 24 quid a week or something. We're over 18, but you know, you had just enough money to survive, especially if you're like living in a squat or you live somewhere super cheap with lots of other people, and you just had enough to hitchhike and go climbing and buy a block of chalk and stuff like that. So, you know, those people had like unlimited amount of time and very little money. So if you got like a part-time job, so I started working 3 days a week, you know, so like I took like a, you know, how much is that? 20% of my 40%? Was that a 40% reduction in my income? But I felt like I doubled the amount of time I had, because, you know, my free time was 2 days a week, and now I had 4 days a week. So I doubled the amount of time I had to do stuff. but I'd only reduce my income by 40% or something, 20%, 30%. I don't know. I don't get all that kind of stuff. So I might have halved my time, free time. I don't know. But, you know, but I think you can see what I'm talking about. But the, I would say is you have to be, again, going back to this thing of being a hunter-gatherer, that you have to, if you're going to, ideally, what the thing you're going to spend more time doing, you have to be able to convert that into some kind of financial gain, ideally. Like if you're going to, say you want to do, you really hate working cleaning toilets and you really want to be doing pottery. So you start doing, you only clean toilets 3 days a week and then you start developing your pottery 4 days a week. So you actually don't have any days off. You know, those 2 days off, because you're doing something you want to do, they become work days as well. So you're actually working 7 days a week, but in your mind, you're only working 3 days a week. And you develop your pottery to the point where you can sell your pottery. And then you end up just, then you remove those like 3 days a week when you were working in the toilet, cleaning toilets, and they're your days off now. And you spend the other days doing your pottery. But what you'll probably do is you'd probably end up working 7 days a week doing pottery. So to just think like, I'm just going to focus on wanking. I'm just going to work 3 days a week and just like wank for the rest of it. You know, that's not really going to be, oh, just going to play on Xbox. I'm going to become like a brilliant Xbox guy. I'm going to like make loads of money on, you know, online or whatever. Like, it's just that really you have to have some kind of realistic thing. So it's not about, you know, having more time to be lazy. You really have to have a plan, really. So having a plan to change your life is kind of important. Because it's much harder to do it. Having no debt is probably one of the most important things. Like when in the 80s, when Margaret Thatcher sort of changed the rules, I think you have to have like a 25% of your mortgage to get a mortgage, 25% like down payment. And people could buy the council houses and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of unions told their members not to buy a house, because once you bought a house, once you had a mortgage, you were kind of trapped in a way. You had all this debt and you had to repay it and you couldn't miss payments, you could lose your house. You know, if you're in a council house, it's actually quite hard to get theft out of a council house. You know, you're paying rent to the council. You could say it's like circular, like the money was going for it was like more socially responsible to be renting a council house. So yeah, they didn't want people to get into debt. And then you had this thing, you know, when I was growing up, like the only debt you had, there was like the catalogue woman, you know, so my mum would be paying, would get things in a cat from a catalogue, and then she would be paying this woman back. The woman would come around, you know, with her getting her money, you know, so you buy like a bike and you'd be paying off like £5 a month, you know, for like 3 years or something. It was like kind of crazy when you think about it. I don't know what interest you were paying. I'm sure there was interest. And then you'd have like Christmas money where you'd be paying someone else some money, and then at Christmas they would give you it back. So kind of crazy. We had a television where you had to put 50p pences into the television to get the television working, and then that, the idea was that would cover the rental. So when the guy would come, he would count all the money out and he would give you, you know, what was a, you know, beyond the, you know, so maybe it cost £10 a month to rent a television. So if there was like £16, he would give you £6 back and stuff in 50p's. And, you know, your electricity worked the same way. You put money into the electricity. So you couldn't get into debt, basically. So that was the whole idea. You couldn't get into debt. You could get into debt in that you got a bike for Christmas. But even then, you know, there was like kind of there was a real stigma. Like once you were known for not being able to pay your debt for your bike, you know, you wouldn't have it. But there was no like, there was no credit cards or overdrafts or anything like that. I don't know. I often wonder if that it was a, you know, that was probably a very middle class, upper middle class thing to have a credit card. And I think maybe one thing that changed was the more people started going to university, the more debt they got into, because they would be able to get like credit cards, like, you know, being to lend money to students seemed to be like quite a big thing. So although I never went to university, you know, I hung around with lots of students, and they always had plenty of money, but none of them were working. And I think it wasn't coming from the grants. They just ended up with like loads of debt. And even when I started working, you know, meeting one or two people, and you're like, Christ almighty, like, how are you ever going to pay? You know, they just got into loads and loads of debt, and just wondered how they'd ever get out of it. So debt, you know, debt went from being something that was, you know, people didn't, you'd have to go to a bank manager and try and lend some money. It was not going to lend money to anybody unless, you know, they had a house and some like collateral and stuff. So anyway, I don't have any debt. Like, I paid all my debt off. Like, when I got divorced, I had about 16 grand of debt, and I don't even know where all that debt came from, but it was, I think I blame my ex-wife. And but anyway, so I made some money, and I went on tour and basically got this money. And basically, once I'd paid my tax and I paid this debt, I didn't have any money left, so I ended up having to like sell loads of gear on eBay and stuff to just get by. But at the time, it was really hard, like, paying off this debt, because, you know, 16 grand, Christ, you know, think what you can do with 16 grand. But that's the thing, is like, once you get rid of the debt, you know, it does make a huge difference, especially if you can avoid getting back into debt. Like, I don't own a credit card, so I had some problems with my car, so I couldn't. It's very hard to hire a car these days without a credit card, which is a constant pain in the ass. And I've tried to get a credit card just for hiring cars, but because I'm like 50, I've never had a credit card, like, not properly in my name. I probably have like terrible credit rating because it never seemed to be able to get one. But so I know it's for, you know, if people have lots of debt, it's easy to say to pay it off, but it's not, you know, it's not easy to do it. I think being like trying to, if you can't have what you want, so if you, you know, if you really want to be going climbing or going on adventures or going skiing, if you can't be having what you want, don't spend your money on something else instead. You know, I can't go to Yosemite, therefore buy the latest MacBook Pro or something. I think we are conditioned to spend all the money we have. I think it's a class thing as well. Like, the more when you hang around with people with money, they're just much more careful on it, and they have this thing like, why would I spend my money when I could invest it? You know, instead of spending, you know, 2 grand on a new computer, why don't I get like a grand of bitcoins, and then I'll just spend that other grand on just living as cheaply as possible, because then I've got like half money of it, my money's invested in something, or, you know. But they're just that's kind of mentality, a bit like, I know someone who's a farmer in Ireland, and he's never been on holiday. He's like, what, you know, why have you never been on holiday? He says, like, well, I could just buy a cow instead, you know. So like, to him, that makes like total sense, and it probably does make sense, really. So yeah, it's kind of instead of getting into debt for shit you don't really want, that you won't even remember what you bought it with, it's probably better to try and save money from not buying shit you don't want, and you won't even remember what you bought, you know. Just if you did buy it, and just try, like, on tour, like, I've been trying to stay in Airbnbs. I've been trying to stay as like cheaply as possible. Because you can be on tour and you can be like, oh, I'm on tour, I'll just stay in hotels everywhere, it's only like 100 quid a night or something. But it'll add up to like, you know, 2 grand. And if you add in all your travel and everything else, you might spend like 3 grand like on tour or something, on all that kind of stuff, your food and everything else. But, you know, if you can, if you can do it cheaply, the more profit you have, really, and the more profit you have, the longer you have. You know, it's like a squirrel, like getting its nuts and putting them away for the winter. I always try and have, like, in my business, I pay myself minimum wage, so I try and pay myself so I always remain in a tax band, which I think is an acceptable amount of tax. Like, basically, in Ireland I pay, is it like 20% tax or something? Whenever I look at what I'm, you know, how much tax and all the stuff, payments you have to pay out, you know, PAYE, it's like, oh Christ, that's a lot of money, that is, you know. So but I just try and pay myself like enough that's acceptable, that I can live on, but I don't pay myself like a crazy amount of money, because I always try and have I basically have like a year's amount of money in my bank account, in my business bank account. So even if I have no work for an entire year, I can pay myself for an entire year. And I suspect that even in that year, I will get enough work to be able to pay myself for another 6 months, if you know what I mean. I'll be replenishing, but I'm always taking out less than's going in. And if I started feeling like there was a constriction in my income, then I could reduce my income by half, and I could survive on that. I could reduce even further and survive on that. But I never want, I can't deal with the stress of like thinking, oh my God, I've got like, I've had this in the past, I'm like, shit, like I cannot pay myself next month, and how am I going to pay my tax, and how am I going to do this and do that. So for me, always knowing I've got like that money there gives me, because I've worked through three major constrictions in my income. So you had the crash 2007 that affected my income, and then you had Brexit that really affected my income, because the years leading up to Brexit, like, there was basically no corporate speaking work. It all died. I might have died because people thought I was an alt-right racist asshole, but anyway a lot of that just died because businesses just stopped doing any kind of corporate, you know, stuff like that. And then you've had COVID. Like, I didn't take any, you know, I probably wouldn't get it anyway, but you know, I had to survive through COVID, where you can't do any slideshows, you can't do any corporate stuff. I did like a bit of corporate stuff on Zoom, but it's like a constriction. And you know, now you hope that things will improve. So in business wise, but I think also having savings, the least amount of savings you have, the more problems you're gonna come up with. And I think that's the thing about, I think when you live adjacent to poverty, like when you grow up in relative poverty, is you know that it's the small things that just throw you off. You know, the washing machine stops working, or you know, you get this unexpected bill for something, or you know, you just so the classic thing is like yesterday, like Zoom took like 170 euros out of a bank account because I'd forgotten I don't really need to be on Zoom anymore, but I'd signed up so I could do like more people on Zoom, and you know, it's like oh bollocks, like that's like I need to sort that out. But if I had like no, you know, if all I had was 200 euros in my bank account and Zoom just took 175 out of it, I couldn't get it back, I'd be fucked basically. So yeah, that's another thing, is taking great care and understanding where all the money goes out of your bank account every month. Like, just go in and just, you know, actually go through your statements and like, oh my God, I've been paying for Amazon Prime, like, you know, for my kids, or I've been this gym membership or shit like that. So that black guy used to do like the personal finance stuff on television. Like, I think you have to start being a little bit like that and be, because what you realise is, I always used to hate anything to do with money. You know, when it came to talks or corporate stuff, I really hated dealing with money. So that's why I had to have like an agent dealing all that kind of stuff. But then someone told me that money is energy. It's like fuel. Like if you haven't got any, you can't do anything. And it's a real danger to money's not important. Like money is either everything or it's something. It's never nothing, which is, I can't remember who said that anyway, but it's a very true line. And people who say, oh, happiness is more important than money, those people are usually fucking loaded, you know. Or somebody else is like supporting them and they don't appreciate it, you know. So it is important to take notice of money, because without money you're not going to be able to go and do the things you want to do. You're going to be very restricted. And the more money you have, the more easy it is to get money if you want it, if you know what I mean. Like it kind of attracts money. I'm not talking about like huge amount of money, but if I'm like working in a hotel doing cleaning, it's very hard to really develop like my corporate speaking or writing books and stuff, because I'll just be knackered, you know. So having enough money to be able to afford to focus some time on something else which can make more money, you know, if I do like a corporate gig, I can make more money in you know 40 minutes than it used to take me a month to make when I was working in the climbing shop. But to develop, to have got to that level, I had to stop working in a climbing shop and get paid, you know, like, and not make money. You know, I had to like sacrifice my income for some future income of making, you know, like a significant amount of money. But you're not making that. Like some people, you know, like Ranulph Fiennes or someone might be making $5,000 every day. You know, might be talking every day, might be making $5,000, might be making $20,000. You know, and every single day is doing that. But then you get to the point where it's like, I didn't really sign up to this, to just be traveling around, staying in hotels, doing the same old talk over and over again. I signed up to this to be going on adventures and having an interesting life. So then you've gone the other way, you know, and it's like my life. Like I know people who, you know, started off with not a lot of money and now have become like incredibly successful at what they do. But they're kind of trapped in it because their lifestyle has now developed to the point where it requires a lot of maintenance. They have, you know, they have like a stable with horses and shit like that. You know, they can't downsize anymore. So I would say my life is very downsizable. You know, I can live on. Live on very little, so knowing you can do that, and again that comes down to not having any debt. Like if I'm paying, you know, like £300 a month on paying off all this debt I've got, then it's very hard. I haven't got that much flexibility to do that. So what else? Like it's like, I know it's like very easy to rabbit on like this because most people's lives aren't that simple, but I think it, you know, like a lot of it's to do with the, you know, it's knowing your value really, what you can do, you know, what your potential is to, and again like it sounds like when you talk about money, again it's not the money, it's about your value. You know, the money is just what you paid in return for the value you're bringing to that thing. So, like on tour, like normally on tour, I'll make like quite a lot of money. But if you think of the value that I gave to, you know, like 10,000 people, you know, and then there's the ones who didn't like it, but the 10,000 people who saw you over your tour, then that value is probably, that's the value I'm worth, because I wouldn't, if I did it again and if I didn't get the same people coming or more people, then that's demonstrated that I'm not worth that, and then I won't get it the next time. So, so maintaining, you know, like the thing about being hypersensitive is supply and demand. You know, I've got to supply a product, and if it's no good, then, you know, I'll lose the contract. So, that's why it's kind of important to be in being focused. Rather than like, fuck you, I'll just talk what I want to talk about. I have to always be like, does someone read, you know, you're paying money to be entertained. I'm not going to come and do a big diatribe about Donald Trump or Brexit or, you know, some, you know, Scottish independence or something. You know, it's not really my, it's not, that's not what you're coming to hear. So it's important to, you know, to try and understand these things. Yeah, I guess it can't be that simple about having freedom. I don't know if in reality most people are basically battling against themselves to make themselves as least free as possible. You know, they're just always getting themselves more into debt. Like the people I know who are making very good livings, like way more than I make, are often got way more debt than me as well. I just don't understand it. But they always want like the latest car, the latest phone, the latest this, the latest that. And I think often it's a replacement for something that's missing in their life. Like what they really want is, I guess, as a lot of people have experienced in the last 2 years, you know, is that time to do what they want to do. But they can't have that because it's too difficult to get it. You know, they think it's too difficult to get it, and so they just end up getting more and more in debt. Because, like, you know, if you can't have the things you want, you might as well have the things you can get. it's hard not to amass things, you know. Like, but remember what the Mongols said. You know, the Mongols, they were like nomadic. And they said that life, I think they said this anyway, life is like a bridge and you have to cross it. And the least things you have, the better it'll be. You know, the least. If you're a nomad, you don't want to be carrying shit around you don't want. So I guess it's about trying, if possible, to strip everything down. Like, why do we have so much variety in food? Like, why is it every night we're trying to make something different and we're trying to make something, you know, special? And, you know, why do we have to have a pudding? And why do we have to, you know, why can't we just eat the same food every day? Like, you know, in Africa, everyone eats a ugali, which is like maize. And, you know, in China, everyone's like rice 3 times a day. You know, most people in the world, they're just eating the same stuff all the time, you know. In Mexico and places, you know, there might have some slight variations, but basically, you know, just, you know, why, see if you can just eat the same food. See if you can go 1 month, just try and make food, and nothing could come from a box. Nothing can have like ingredients printed on it. You have to make it from the raw ingredients. And just see if you can just eat that every day for a month, the same food. So you could have, like, you can have porridge if you want. You can have porridge for breakfast, and then you don't need any dinner, and then you can have a clean meal. So just get a steam some carrots and some broccoli and a bit of fish. You know, fish doesn't have to be that expensive, or a bit of chicken, and that's it. Just have that every day for a month. See if you can do it. And you'll find you'll probably save shitloads of money. You'll find that you've only got so much CPU power in your brain, not even to think about what you're eating every day. It'll be good. So yeah, oh, my phone's ringing again. Oh Christ Almighty! Anyway, I'll leave it there. I'll answer my phone and apologise if this is, you know, blah blah blah. And until next week, see you soon. Bye.
to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.